Okay, we're at the bottom of a Kaf Beis Amud Beis. We learned the Mishnah about Barishon Ayim Asim Masuot. You having elections again?
My bookmark.
Oh. It's handy. It's good to keep handy. Mm-hmm. What's your prediction? Are we going to have elections again?
I have no prediction.
No? Now that you're out of office, you can have an opinion. Masin Masuot, they would wave the torches in order to notify. And the Gemara wants to know what Masin Masuot means. It doesn't mean to like wave the torches, it means to burn the torches. I was surprised we did not get more etymological insight from you.
Masin Masuot, that makes sense. It's almost like the most logical. And Masuot is something that's. It's even Masuot, I guess. The same charge.
A Masuot is called a Masuot because it burns. Or because it's elevated.
No.
And is there a play on words here? But that was an etymological point. Only few are interested in etymological points. It happens one of the few are around the table. But then the Gemara says, Tanu Rabbanan. You see like the line and a half into the Gemara. Four lines up from the bottom. Ein masin masuot, ela ala chodesh shenireh bizmano. I apologize, because all day long I kept saying to myself, I should make a chart. And that's what I would, if we had a bulletin, a blackboard here, I would have drawn it. But instead you'll just have to imagine it in your head. Ein masin masuot, ela ala chodesh shenireh bizmano. They would only light torches when the moon was seen in its time. Ve'ematai masin l'or iburo. L'or iburo means the following night. So let's say the witnesses see the moon on what we call Sunday night, with what in halacha is called
Or Yom Sheni.
Monday morning, they would go to Bet Din. Bet Din would sanctify the new moon. What's the first opportunity to have the torch ceremony?
Monday night.
Anu nosim lapidim. That's nose. Monday night. And Monday night would tell the Bnei HaGolah that Monday had been, Yom Sheni had been Rosh Chodesh.
They missed that Musaf in there, hello.
That's not the concern. The concern here is that they should have the dates right for the purposes of upcoming Yom Tov. Lememra da achaser avdinan, amale lo avdinan. So that implies that when the month is chaser, let's say Sunday is the 29th, we don't know if Monday is going to be
the 1st or the 30th.
Sunday night they see the new moon. Monday morning they're Mekadesh the Chodesh. Monday night they send the torch relay to let the Bnei HaGolah know that Monday in fact was the 1st, not the 30th. So this implies that they would only do the torch for a Chodesh Chaser.
Right, because there's no point. You need to.
Because if it's 30 days, there's no point. As they're in the Gola, they're sitting around. They're looking out their window at night. The night, what we call Monday night, which is either Motzei, the first day, Motzei Aleph or Motzei Lamed.
Right.
If they see the torches, they know that Monday had been Rosh Chodesh, and tomorrow morning they're going to wake up, it's already going to be the 2nd of the month. And if there's no signal, they know that tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh.
Also, having a second signal, if they didn't signal both days, it would be confusing. Somebody wasn't sure. Like, in other words, how do you know which day? I think it was the first day, maybe it was delayed. It's knowing it's always, there's no signal if it's...
I see you've read ahead. Well done, David, for preparing the Gemara in advance.
It's on a Monday, so it's easier.
Yeah.
But also you're taking consideration that people know... you're taking consideration that people follow along and know what day of the month it is. So if they don't see a signal, it's like they automatically... They realize, okay, today's the 30th, there's no signal, it must be whatever... must be a full month, therefore tomorrow is the first. Okay, we're good to go. But if they lose track of time, if they don't know...
If they don't know Bechla, what day of the month it is.
Right.
Yes, but presumably, who are we talking about here?
People in Bavel.
Yes, but which people in Bavel?
Chaim
Yankel?
Right, no.
Shmerel? Beryl? Yeah. Presumably, Hoi Poloi, the Amcha, may or may not have known. May or may not have been paying attention. But the Bet Din in every place would pay attention, and then they would know which day coming up is going to be Leil HaSeder, and they would make a point to inform people. We all know that there are plenty of people that don't know. I mean, I wouldn't want to put everyone here to the test, but it's pretty easy to know since we just had Rosh Chodesh. But if I asked you what day of the month is it, some people might have to think or even like do the math on their fingers.
When I was a Mashkiach, we used to have to like...
We just finished Gimel. It's now Orla Dalet Kislev.
When I was a Mashkiach in these American factories, and we'd open up a box or something, and we'd want to, you know, we'd see that it was kosher, and we wanted to close it back up, and we left in the factory. So we'd write on it the date in Hebrew. Because I figured even if they would be able to look up, you know, what Hebrew letters are, they're not going to be able to figure out the dates and the, you know, when we, how we knew what day was. And that was a...
But why wouldn't you want them to know what the date was?
No, in other words, we wouldn't want them to be able to open up the box, hypothetically replace the contents with something else, and then tape it again. Was that we just had tape and markers. So look between the different machines, so there was an easy way to make sure. Right.
I mean, you know,
even we didn't know. We had to look up every time to find out what it was.
And certainly, to whatever degree we bear an awareness of the Hebrew dates in America. If you remember your life in America. You know what America is? It's like Australia, but better.
That's it.
Backwards, yeah.
Backwards. I would think Australia is better than America.
Yeah, I mean, in Chutz La'aretz, Bechlal, people are not attuned to the Hebrew dates. I once heard Rav Aviner say that he does not know the English dates of his children's birth dates. Like, if he ever has to fill out a form, he has to, like, look it up on his Tudat Zichut. He said his own birthday, he was born in Chutz La'aretz. His own birthday, like, what can he do? You can't erase. There's certain, like, things you can't erase from your memory. Right? But his children were all born here. He has no positive knowledge of what the English dates are. Because we should live our lives according to... According to the Hebrew dates.
Or the Babylonian dates.
So my daughter was born on Shushan.
And my first born was on the first on Hanukkah.
So there's certain dates that are easy. We have a daughter who was born on the fourth day of Hanukkah, so it's easy to remember. It happens her English birth date is December 25th, which is also Avoneinu, an easy date to remember.
But they would have had cyclic calendars anyway, so it would be easy to mark down cyclic calendar. Day one counts 30 days. And
yes, but I'm just talking about like the way the consciousness, time consciousness, the people. Anyway, my timer. So why would they not do, why would they only do the torches after a chaser, but not after a malay? So Amar Rabbi Zeira, Gzeira Mishum Rosh Chodesh Chaser Shechaliyot Be'erev Shabbat. When Rosh Chodesh is on Erev Shabbat, when it's a one day Rosh Chodesh, what we call one day Rosh Chodesh, and it's on Erev Shabbat, so they would normally do the torches when?
Saturday night.
No.
Friday night.
But you can't do it Friday night. Right? So when would they do it?
Maybe
Thursday.
Friday would do it.
No.
Oh, no, on a regular, and they have to do it, they would do it on...
V'avdei.
They would do it on
Motzei Shabbos. Eimat, avdei, b'afukei Shabta. They would do it on Motzei Shabbos.
How would people broad them know which?
Because you never did it on the night following the night following the 31st.
Oh, you really need to bring the chart.
Right. Take it easy on a whiskey. In other words, Thursday night, Thursday is... Thursday is the 29th.
Okay.
Friday is either Aleph or Lamed. If it turns out that Friday is Aleph...
Meaning that...
That Friday is Rosh Chodesh.
But they saw the moon...
They saw the moon Thursday night. Okay. Friday morning they go to Bet Din, they're Mekadesh the Chodesh. The earliest time you can do the Masuot is Friday night. Right. It has to be dark when you do it.
Right.
Can't do it Friday night because of Shabbos. Right?
But then they don't know.
So you do it Saturday night.
How do they know then?
Because you never do it on the...
Hold on a second.
You never do it on the night following the 31st. Right? You never do it the night following the 31st.
30th.
No, the 31st.
Right. You could do it the night following.
Because the 30th would have been Shabbos. The 30th would have been Shabbos.
Thursday is the 29th.
Right.
Friday is either the 30th or the turns out to be the 1st. Shabbos, we don't know what date it is. You're in Bavel. You don't know that Friday was Rosh Chodesh. So Shabbos is the 31st day since the previous Rosh Chodesh. So you know that... You know that Rosh Chodesh, on Motzei Shabbos, you know that either the previous day, Shabbos, or the day before, Friday, had been Rosh Chodesh. Yes. If they light the torches on Motzei Shabbos, meaning Motzei the 31st, or in fact, what is Motzei the 2nd,
means they saw the moon Thursday night.
It means they'd seen the moon on Thursday night. If they always do the torches on a Malay, so then there'd be no significant. There'd be nothing communicated. So if they light on Motzei Shabbos after a Malay, that's to tell you that really we should have lit 24 hours earlier. But what, it was Shabbos, so that's why we skipped it then, and that's why we're doing it now.
And if they see the moon on Friday night.
If they see the moon on Friday night, they come to Beit Din on Shabbos morning.
And Motzei Shabbos they light.
And Motzei Shabbos they light.
Okay. I don't know which one
it is. Well, that counts 30 days or 31 days.
No, because then they know that was 29 days.
Right, that's the only day.
Then it's a chaser.
Right, they know that.
Because they know the days anyway.
That could be confusing. If they see it in Motzei Shabbos, they wouldn't know.
Could be confusing. They would have to
see. No, in other words, when Motzei Shabbos is Motzei...
There's two reasons you could be like...
When Motzei Shabbos is Motzei the 30th, they know that the 30th had been the 1st. When Motzei Shabbos is Motzei the 31st, then they know that Friday had been the 1st.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So De'i Amarti Navid Namei Amalei, because if they were to light also for a Chaser, also for a Malay, Atu Limit Oi, they'll come to get confused.
Right?
Because they wouldn't know Omre, Hai Chaserhu, V'hai Delo Avid Me'et Mol, Mishum Delo Efshar. So they'll say, no, it was the reason they didn't like yesterday. Right?
There would in that case have been two possibilities.
Odilma Malehu uvizmanoa Ibru rila aved ben amole uvena chaser. Right? V'chi mikle Rosh Chodesh be'erev Shabbos, when Rosh Chodesh is on Friday, lo li aved klal.
And this is the only reason for doing it when it was, for not lighting torches on a Malay, because...
Well, as you know from... Having looked ahead, we'll see the Gemara is going to play with a few different possibilities here. But right now...
I forgot about other possibilities.
V'chi mikle Rosh Chodesh be'erev Shabbos, when Rosh Chodesh is on Erev Shabbos, lo le'aved klal. So maybe we should say we just skip it all together. And then they'll know from... In other words, why don't we say... The first position is never do it on a Malay.
In order not to be confusing in the year where...
And there's only one time that you light on Motzei what would have been the Malay. That's this case of Shabbos to tell you that
Friday
night we should have lit for Friday, but we couldn't, obviously. So you could also flip it. You could say also always do it on a Malay. And Friday Rosh Chodesh, the absence is what signals.
But the absence can mean two different things.
Yeah?
But don't ask me to explain why, but it would seem to me that the absence can mean you can interpret you have a possible interpretation of the absence.
The absence can be a mistake. An absence can be a mistake.
No,
so you can't rely on being absent.
Saturday, it could have been Rosh Chodesh, could have been Rosh Chodesh, or Friday, could have been Rosh Chodesh.
No, because if it had been Saturday, then they would have lit on Motzei Shabbos to tell you that the previous day had been.
Right.
So, but if we're trying to signal something by not lighting anything at all, v'kevan delo avdin on Motzei Shabbat v'avdin on Amolei meida yodei dechaser hu. Right. And then they would know that it was chaser because we skipped it. Hafilu hachi atulimitai. Even that, in that case, they'll also by trying to signal something by skipping it. That might also lead to error. Omre, hai molehu, v'hai delo avde itnusehu de itnuse. In other words, no. Maybe they would say taka it was mole. So why didn't they light it on Motzei Shabbos? In other words, what's the suggestion here? Rosh Chodesh is on Friday. So according to the first opinion, when do they light?
Motzei Shabbos.
And since normally they would never be lighting Motzei the 31st, the fact that they are lighting on Motzei 31st is to tell you 2 days ago was Rosh Chodesh, and the reason we didn't light last night was because of Shabbos.
Right.
So now we say, Pumfakert. Always light on a Molei, except for the case of when Rosh Chodesh is on Friday, and in the absence of lighting on Motzei Shabbos is what indicates that Friday had been. So then the Gemara says no, because maybe people will think it was a mole. Shabbos was Rosh Chodesh. So why didn't they light on Motzei Shabbos? They tried to, but something went wrong. It was windy, it was rainy, it was cold, something happened, something didn't succeed, there was all types of things that went wrong that prevented them from...
But by having a rule, not lighting on a mole, so you're minimizing the times that you
work, right.
So there's less chance of something going wrong.
Right, so Rashi says, what could have gone wrong on Motzei Shabbos? Well, I don't know what goes on in your house, but Rashi says, B'shichut shel mishta HaShabbos, right? Maybe they had a little too much at the, when I was a kid, they used to have wild turkey at Chal Shudas. So maybe they had a little too much at Chal Shudas. The mayonnaise and the egg salad got them.
What is Rashi?
What?
Which Rashi is?
Rashi says, B'shichrut shel mishteh Shabbos.
Just taking a nap.
Yes, all types of things happen on Motzei Shabbos. You know what happened on Motzei Shabbos? You have the dishes to do.
Yeah.
Right?
Shabbat Yagun.
There's Shabbat Yagun. Your kid tells you they have, a book report to do tomorrow. They haven't, found a book yet. But it's happened to me. You've been to my house, right? Would you say I have a book or two at home?
A few.
Because do we have any books here? I have to read a book for a book report. Are you kidding me? Didn't you spend your whole life in this house? He says, not those kinds of books. Why can't you do a book report on Sefer Haggai?
No. So just by the way, it says here about that Rashi, V'atzlach masbir shedvar ze lo nemar legabei beit din shebi Yishalayim, ela yechashu shema otam anashim shebetachanot ha-beinayim yirah lemon hazeh. So we're not saying the Sanhedrin is going to all be drunk and they're going to... Well, yeah,
That's the point. It's a game of telephone. Right. There's 20 tachanot between here and there.
And somebody was busy.
Right. All you need is the line to get dropped at one move.
But technically, according to this, in Chutz La'aretz, they'll never be celebrating Rosh Chodesh Bezman. It will be retroactive.
Again, that is not the point. I'll say it again. Take it easy on a whiskey.
There's nothing.
The point has to do with the integrity of the calendar.
Okay.
So aved amole velo aved achaser klal. Omar Abaye. So pumfakir. So why not say we'll always do it on the mole, and we'll never do it on the chaser. So when nothing happens, they will have known it was a chaser. And if something happens, they'll know that it's a mole. Mishum bitl malacha la'am shnei yamim. Because then what would happen? They wouldn't know until 3 days later.
Right, so they would have observed minhagim.
So they would have observed the minhagim of Rosh Chodesh for two possible days. What is this bitl malacha?
Well, you never want to create a situation in which the workers are not working if they don't have to be not working.
So Rashi says, Omar Abaye mishum bitl malacha. Velo garsinan gzeira, iamart na'aved amole, velo achaser, ein lecha rosh hashana, she'ein mitbatlim, b'nei hagola, mimalacha, shnei yamim. Yom lamid, shema hayom rosh hashana, v'yom shloshim ve'echad, shema iburo, et iburo et chodesh, v'hayom rosh hashana. Aval ki avdinan, masuot achaser, l'or yom shloshim, yadi shebiyom shloshim nikba, V'yasum lacha l'machar, v'ein b'telin shnei yamim, ela b'me'ubar. In other words, this is pretty remarkable. He says they would have to keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah misafek, which is in fact what we do. But you see that this was not always the case. Tosfos disagrees and says this is not a case of specifically about Rosh Hashanah having to keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah out of safek, but the minhag that particularly the nashim have of not doing malacha on Rosh Chodesh. Like there are certain times, like when the candles are burning for Hanukkah and on Rosh Chodesh, that women were noeg not to do malacha. What do you mean women didn't do malacha? Your wife doesn't go to work on Rosh Chodesh? So there were certain, what do they call it? The distaff labors. You know what's the distaff?
Like weaving?
Yeah, the pelech. A certain lady type malachot, like weaving and knitting and laundry and things like that, don't go home and tell your wife that laundry is the...
The minhag is known.
Rav Yoel Ben Nun, years ago. He used to have a son-in-law.
In
Zion. Years ago, in the caravan, he came to give a shir once about working on Rosh Chodesh.
Yeah.
He said something interesting. He said that it used to be in the times of Tanakh that the Rosh Chodesh was the day you didn't work. Talk about you don't work on Rosh Chodesh. When in the times of Antiochus, they made a gzirah against three things. Against Shabbat, Mila, and
Rosh Chodesh.
He said the Yudim were willing to be Moser Nafsham on Shabbat and Mila, but they weren't willing to be Moser Nafsham on Rosh Chodesh.
On the minhag of not working
because
on Rosh
Chodesh. Because once you weren't willing to be Moser Nefesh for it, then it just it lost. That's why it no longer remained a minhag, because they weren't willing to commit to it.
What does it mean they weren't willing to be Moser Nefesh on Rosh Chodesh?
They just didn't. They told them you had to work on Rosh Chodesh, and they did.
Oh.
They just gave it. Okay, say fine. All right, we'll work on Rosh Chodesh. But they wouldn't. Unlike Shabbat, they weren't willing to work on Shabbat, but they were willing to work on Rosh Chodesh.
I mean, I think that's, you know, patently...
No, but the Navi criticized people who would work on this.
Yes. So anyway, but the point is that if they only lit it on a mole, which meant some months they would light and some months they wouldn't light. As if it was a chaser, they wouldn't light. Everybody would know that 2 days earlier it had been Rosh Chodesh. So that causes bitul malacha, because you have to keep the first 2 days. You always be keeping 2 days out of safek. So it is that we don't do because of the bitul malacha. So here's a strange Gemara. Also, for this is not for the etymologists, but for the botanists, the flora side of the equation. So how would they? The Mishnah says about these klunsot, poles.
Columns.
What?
Columns.
Can you?
Columns.
Columns.
That's what the same word.
But that klunsot and column come from the same word?
It's the Latin word column.
So Omar Rav Yehuda, arba minei arazim hin. There are four types of erez. Apparently erez doesn't mean
cedar.
It's like a category of tree. Erez kitros etz shemen uvrot. Steinsaltz must give the botanical names. which are like translating a word I don't know with a Latin word I don't know. Shemen brosh kitros omar rav adra debe rabbi shela omre mavliga of omre lazu golmish ufliga deraba baravhuna de omar rabba baravhuna omre beirav asara mine arazim him. There are 10 types, and they're trying to identify what are good. I don't think this is like a halacha l'moshe misinai, that when you made the torches, they had to be made out of. I think it's reporting what were the common ways of making these torches. Like presumably, like had they had the technology, if they had the bat signal, you know, that would have been just as good.
Well, presumably if they had a telegraph, they just would have sent telegraphs.
Let's say. So asara mine arazim, there are 10 types of arazim, shnemar, pasuk in Yeshayahu. Eten b'midbar erez shita v'hadas v'etz shemen ashim b'arava b'rosh tidhar. Right, and it's this pasuk is the source of those lines in Dror Yikra. V'tashur yachdu erez arza shita tornita hadas zasa etz shemen afarsama brosh barta tidhar shaga. In other words, the Gemara is translating into Aramaic, and just like Steinsaltz is giving you the Latin names of the trees, the Gemara is giving you the Aramaic names of the trees that appear in this pasuk in Yeshayahu. Hani Shiva. So those are seven. As it says, there's 10 types of erez, and then the Gemara lists seven. Ki ata Rav Dimi Omar hosifu lehem alonim, almonim, almogin. Almogin means what?
Coral.
So obviously it's not coral.
Actually, I read about this once. Actually,
there's a tree called coral wood. Mm-hmm. It may be called that because the wood grows in a pattern that resembles coral. So alonim butme, almonim blute, almogin kisita,
among his own. Brazil wood.
It's what?
Brazil wood.
Brazil wood. Ika de Amre, and there's some that say not almonim, almogin, alonim, but aronim, armonim, almogin. Oranim, are, armonim, dolve, a dolev. What's a dolev tree in English? A chestnut?
That's what they have out here.
No. What's a dolev?
A dolev is like a giant box used for fruits and whatever.
No. There's a dolev tree. There's a... Like here, you have a nachal dolev. You're like going down to Beit Shemesh. What's it called in English? Okay, anyways, now the Gemara says, it's not exactly clear what the connection here is. It might have something, the Gemara now talks about boats. It might have something to do with the fact that boats are made out of heavy wood. The Pasuk in Yeshayahu says, V'tzi adir lo ya'avrenu. In describing what'll be, in the Beit HaMikdash, there's this stream, this river that'll flow out of Beit HaMikdash down into the Gihon, and it'll be so strong that a mighty ship, a tsi adir, in modern Hebrew a tsi is a fleet, but in the Tanakh a tsi just meant a big ship. Tzi adir lo yavrenu. And this stream will be so strong that a mighty ship wouldn't be able to cross it. So Amar Rav, zu borni gdola. At sea, Adir means a very big ship. Does he have a picture? Hechi Avdu. How would they make this big? How would they do it? Mighty Sheet Alfe Gavre, Betracer Yarche. They would bring 6,000 men in 12 months. The Amri La Tracer Alfe Gavre, and some say 12,000 men, Beshita Yarche, in 6 months. V'tani lo chala ad de shachna v'nochid bar.
So the ship was sitting on the ocean bed, but it was still dissipated over the waterline.
Right, so it has to do with how they would collect the... Oh, here's a picture. You see this kind of ship? And as apparently the Gemara, since the Gemara mentioned this thing about Almog, which was talking about a kind of tree, but then it's curious about how Almog coral is harvested from the ocean, which is not so like simple to understand. So they'd bring 6,000 men for 12 months of the year, or they'd bring 12,000 men for 6 months of the year, and they'd put sand in the boat, and the boat would sink down. As they would put ballast in the ship, and the ship would sink down, and then they would send someone down with ropes around the coral, and then they would tie the other end to the boat, and then they'd get rid of the ballast, and then the boat would lift up, and it would wrench the coral out of its spot. And that's how they would harvest. Excuse me. That's how they would harvest the coral.
So
how they do that exactly? They didn't have scuba diving gear or anything like that.
I mean, I think coral grows relatively close to the shore.
So, by the way, the Rashi incorrectly.
Well, don't say that.
Well, he didn't know what he said. He says that coral was a min etz shole bekarka. He thinks it actually is a tree, which is why he would say that the Almog tree and the Almog corals are the same.
Well, I said, he thought that the tree grows out of the coral?
No, he thought the coral was a tree. That is a tree that grows an underwater tree.
Oh.
The coral was a tree that the roots of the tree started from within the ocean, where coral starts, and then grew up from there.
But I, in this post that I wrote a few years ago, so I said that another theory is that both the sandalwood is the other option, and corals share a common reddish color. And the shape of the coral, which kind of looks like a tree, well, you know, you've seen it grows like coral.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why they led people to think that it actually was a tree that grew underwater.
Mm-hmm. But yes, they could send divers down. I mean, in the ancient world, they farmed pearls and other things, which involved...
If you're saying the coral is like close to the shore, so what's the whole point of this ship?
Because you need, in other words, you can't just pick it up. It's attached to the ground. It's attached to the ocean floor, right? So you need... So how do you exert... In other words, today if they want... I mean, today it's illegal, but you would go down there with like a drill or something and... Or a power saw. So they didn't have those things. So how would they do it? So the patent was they would use the power of the buoyancy of the ship. With the ballast, the ship is, whatever it is, 6 feet down in the water. Then they tie a tight rope from the ship around the coral. They get rid of the ballast. The ship rises up and wrenches the coral out of the ocean. Amid Torahi ulamda anachut zuchim. In case we might want to become... Yes. I mean, it's just curious that the... I mean, it just shows that the Gemara is so all-encompassing. Like, it thinks like it's worthy mentioning the coral diving techniques of the ancient world. And then the Gemara says, "Umachlif al chad train bekaspa," that the value of coral is twice that of silver. Tlat parvata havyan. The Gemara says there were three ports. Parvata is a port. Is that etymologically related?
I don't know.
This is your big day, David. Here.
I can imagine me walking through our morning and having to like respond to you. But I don't
Tarte be armai. Two of them are Roman ports. Vechada de be parsai. And one is a Persian port. De be armai maskan kasita. One of the Roman ports is where they harvest the coral. De be parsai maskan marganita. That's they do pearls. They do pearl diving. Umekarya parvata de mash mehig. The Persian ports are called Mashmahig, are royal, belongs to the royal court. I don't know what that means. It might mean that that anything that comes up to that port is owned by the king or is taxed by the king. Omar Rabbi Yochanan, Kol Shita Veshita Shinatlu Goyim Yerushalayim Atira Kadosh Baruch Hu L'Hachziran La. Each and every Eitz Shita. You know what the Eitz Shita is? That's like the one word we know, because it appears a lot of times in the Torah, particularly in the Parashiyot of the Mishkan. An acacia. An acacia tree. What's an acacia tree? I don't know. But we know that that's what it is. So when the Goyim sacked Yerushalayim and they apparently chopped down a lot of these Atzei Shita, or Atzei Shita are apparently very strong wood. But that's how you can build things out of it. So when the Goyim came, when they sacked Yerushalayim, they either chopped down the wood or they destroyed the trees or they took the trees away for their own purposes. So for each and every tree that the Goyim took from Yerushalayim, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu will replace it. You know, that's what we do. We plant trees, right? You know? JNF. And then what's the pasuk? It's a different pasuk in Yeshayahu. Eten bamidbar erez shita. Ve'en midbar ele Yerushalayim. Shne'emar tzion midbar hayta. Hayata. Right? In other words, what's the midbar? Midbar becomes Yerushalayim b'chur bana. So that's the repayment. So Omar v'Yochanan, kol halomei Torah ve'eno milamda. Domela hadaspa midbar. As the Gemara is kind of like going off on this, these tangents on tangents, all based upon these discussions of these different types of trees. Why did the Gemara discuss these different types of trees?
Because of the
masuot. It's extremely associated.
There had been like Ritalin at the time this was composed.
If you study Torah and don't teach Torah, so you're like a hadas b'midbar. You know what a hadas is? Hadas is like the hadasim. Like
the lulav hadas?
Like the lulav hadas. What's the main feature of the hadas?
The smell.
It's very fragrant. So what's the point of having a hadas in the midbar?
Tree that fell
into our, like it's like a tree that gave a nice smell and no one was there to smell it. Right? In other words, you learn Torah, so you're like a hadas. You're full of this beautiful fragrance. But there's no one there to appreciate it. The point of studying Torah is?
To share
it with others. Is to teach it to others, yes. Yes. You know, curiously, the Rambam, you know, the Rambam in the 613 mitzvot, according to the Rambam, there is no mitzvah to learn Torah. There's a mitzvah to learn and teach Torah.
But the mitzvah to l'dat Hashem, which is, he would say that's the
that's way. That's a separate mitzvah.
But that's for him. That's the way, you know.
Yecholiot. But in other words, yeah, it's not the only way. By the way, the Rambam also holds that consideration of the natural sciences
they're,
is also
they're all together. I'm saying there is an idea of learning on your own without necessarily teaching.
And a chinami. But in other words, when the Rambam comes to count mitzvah Talmud Torah, it's a two sided mitzvah to learn and to teach. In other words, presumably the purpose of learning is to teach. Now the Rav said, the Gemara said that if you are, you can't learn without saying Birkat HaTorah. It's like always like, you know, you get up in the morning, and I'm married to a very righteous woman who all the time thinks about Torah. Usually she's up before me. It's like, I'll get out of bed, and sometimes before I can get to the bathroom, like she'll be asking me something. And I'll tell her, like, I have to. I mean, now she, after many years of marriage, she, you know, she was going to get me one of these. She went to a coffee mug that said, no talkie before coffee. But besides the problem of trying to talk to me before coffee, you can't really talk and learning before you say Birkas HaTorah. So you got to get up, you have to wash Negel Vasser, you have to get yourself going.
Okay, saying, I've often wondered this. Is telling someone you're not allowed to speak before you wash your hands considered a Dvar Torah that you're not allowed to say before washing your hands?
That's a good question. I mean, I don't think we have to like be absolutists in this matter, but but min adin, you're allowed to be maharher b'divrei Torah. Like you can think about Torah without say before you say Birkat HaTorah. That thing is, you wake up in the morning, so you're thinking about like all the chidushei Torah you dreamed about at night. It's happened. Yeah, that's you. So how can you be mahar? And when you're maharher b'divrei Torah, technically it's a form of limud Torah. You're just thinking about it.
You're allowed to be maharher b'divrei Torah on Tisha B'Av?
Are you allowed to? I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how could it be? You're not allowed to learn Torah before you say Birkas HaTorah. Hirhur Divrei Torah is a form of Talmud Torah. How are you allowed to do Hirhur Divrei Torah before Birkas HaTorah? So the Rav said that it's categorically different. In other words, we don't know like how the Talmud Torah meter runs. You know, like if you read the Torah tidbits, is it Talmud Torah? I mean, yeah, I suppose. Is it the same as sitting down with a parak of Rambam or a block Gemara? Presumably not. There's an hour spent learning the Torah tidbits and an hour spent learning a Daf Gemara may not accrue the same reward in heaven. Although we don't know how God keeps his books.
Right.
Not to speak poorly of the Torah tidbits. But, and be clear, let me disparage all of the Parsha sheets, not just the Torah tidbits. But everybody understands that sitting and learning a Daf Gemara or a Perek on the Rambam or a Chumash, Rashi, Ramban is kind of a deeper kind of engagement and is probably worthy of greater reward. So it's not just that Hirhur Divrei Torah is like on such a lower level that you can get away with it without saying Birkat HaTorah. The Rav said the essence of Talmud Torah is always dialogical. Either it's Shnei Talmidei Chachamim Mechadadim Zed Zeh B'Halacha, two people battling it out, you know, trying to figure out the Halacha. Or even if you're sitting and learning on your own.
Which probably more likely, at least for part of the Rav's life, that would have been his mind.
Yes. Even if you're sitting and learning on your own, you're never alone.
Right.
And not just because, you know, his very poetic and famous example of the symposium of the generations, because when he learns, Reb Chaim comes in, and the Rambam comes in, Reb Akiva comes in, but because when you're sitting and learning, it's almanat lelamed. It has that dialogical component, right? You're learning in order to engage others in the learning. Meaning you're learning in a way that will lead to teaching. And that is what requires Talmud. That's what requires Birkas HaTorah. But Hirhur Divrei Torah, you can't possibly teach someone through Hirhur. right? We haven't yet figured out how to be telepathic, right? I can't teach you by being maharher b'divrei Torah. And therefore, hirhurei divrei Torah can never rise to the level of teaching Torah, and therefore, it's not complete enough to require birkat haTorah.
Apparently, that was one of the chiddushim of like Am Yisrael in general, was this idea of teaching to everyone. Even going back fairly early, that they were, you can see, like, they had, that we were the only, like, if you look at older scripts, older Semitic languages, they didn't have the letters with the vowels. They wouldn't have, you know, like, hey could be a consonant, but it couldn't be a vowel. And we added aleph and vav and hey and yud to serve as vowels, which basically meant that anybody could read the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it used to be in most other cultures that it would be the priests who would be able to read it, and the Am wasn't, expected to. They not just right; they would want to be able to read the sacred text.
That we decoded it,
right? And we said no; it should be open to everyone. And that was
anyway. Ikad de Amri. There are those that say pum fakert kol alomei Torah umelamda bimkom she'en tamidei chachamim. Anyone who learns Torah and teaches it in a place where Torah scholars are not on every street corner, domela hadas b'midbar, dechaviv. In other words, hadas b'midbar can either mean the tree in the forest no one hears, it's a waste, or it can be an oasis, right? And as if you learn Torah and you teach Torah in a place where there aren't people to teach Torah, so then you are like the hadas b'midbar. Like, you imagine you're wandering through the desert and you see like a hadas and you take a nice shmek and it's like revives you. So that's Torah b'Midbar. For Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Oy lahem lagoyim she'ein lahem takana. Shneemar. Right? In other words, the goyim, the Romans came, they destroyed Yerushalayim, and there's no remedy. There's no takana. They can never, Shneemar. Tachat ha-nechoshet avi zahav, v'tachat ha-barzel avi kesef, v'tachat ha-itzim nechoshet, v'tachat ha-vanim barzel. There's more from Yeshayahu. Right? And it's in place of brass, Hashem will bring gold. And for iron, he'll bring silver. And for wood, brass. And for stones, iron. In other words, everything's going to get an upgrade. Right? For everything, there's a kind of... Right? And it's whatever you have, you can always upgrade it for something of greater value. Right? Tachat Rabbi Akiva v'chaverav may mevin. Oh, but you know, so like if you used to have silver, so you can replace it with gold. But we used to have Rabbi Akiva. We used to have those Asari Ruge Malchus that the Romans didn't just destroy trees and rocks and buildings. They destroyed Rabbi Akiva. So what can we replace with them? V'aleim hu omer v'niketi damam lo niketi. But for the Talmidei Chachamim that were killed, we say that they there's no repair. Now there's everything the Romans destroyed, right? So we can rebuild it, and we can maybe even make it better. But there's certain things that we can't repair. And for that, and we say like the Romans, they sinned because they destroyed Yerushalayim and there's no way to fix it. But we say, you know what, there's a way to fix it. We can rebuild it. And we can maybe even rebuild it nicer. But there's certain things that can't be rebuilt. And what can't be rebuilt is Rabbi Akiva. Right? And the Haruge Malchus. And for that we say, Damam lo niketi. That the stain against the Romans who did such a thing cannot be repaired, cannot be fixed. Uman hayu mesin masuot v'chulei. This is just now the Gemara is going to go back to this, back to the discussions of what the stations of the torch were. So where's Beit Biltan? So Omar Rav, Zu Biram. It's a town called Biram. Tosfos says, Mashmakan shehu me'eretz Yisrael. V'chein mefarsh Rabbeinu Tam b'kedushin gabei. Right. That this was still, you know, some of the cities were in Eretz Yisrael, and some were already in Chutz La'aretz. But anyway, we'll stop here.